Blog Talk Radio. That's right, that's right. There is something inside so strong that will not stop truth, that will not stop the kingdom of the Most High and His truth and His Christ from accomplishing what He has ordained them to do. I want to thank everybody for another episode, for joining us for another episode of Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Five Smooth Stones. I'm Brother Seth. Just want to let everybody know that tonight I've done some research, and you all is going to really be excited about what you're going to hear tonight. You know, you are going to be excited for what you hear tonight. There's a lot going on. Tonight we're going to be talking about the one and only warlord, the enemy, Satan, as some people want to paint him out to be, and he is a wicked man. There is no doubt that warlord Joseph Kony is for sure one of the planet's most despicable characters. I'm not going to take that back. I think he is a wicked man. And tonight, it's not a night to defend him. Anybody listening to this show that think I'm defending him is cuckoo. I do not defend wickedness, especially on this level. Tonight's show is to expose the system that creates, manufacture, produce the Joseph Konys of the world. Again, to expose, to educate, to enlighten our brothers and sisters out there, for those that don't know about this system that produced the Joseph Konys of the world. As wicked as this man's actions have been, and I'm sure y'all have heard your fair share of what he have done, they do a good job in painting Africans when they mess up. And there is no reason for them to be messing up. When they mess up, people need to know. When anybody mess up and on this level, the world need to know, whoever they are, wherever they are. So I applaud the international community, but it hasn't been an international community, really. That has, I should even mention them. It's been the local grassroots, mostly Caucasian young people that have taken up this cause, and they deserve a round of applause for that. And that is the truth. No matter what the reason is, they deserve a round of applause for that. Okay? Now, having said that, I want y'all to listen to me very well. The system that produced these kinds of people will make this wicked man look like an angel. I'm going to say that again. The system that produced this wicked man will make this man look like an angel compared to the uncomprehendable wickedness and the millions of lives, not 20, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 children in prison and being raped. That is horrible all day long. I'm never ever going to defend that. I'm not defending that. It's wicked, and I hope that the Most High deal with this man according to his deeds. But I'm talking about a system that already is responsible for rapes. Children, I'm talking about situations, strong situations that create these types of environments. Somebody said, well, they're not making them do it. I don't know about that. You know, If you put a gun to somebody's head and tell them to jump off a river, are you going to blow their brains out and they jump off the river? Did you make them jump off the river? No. But sometimes situations in life, like a gun to your head, will tempt you in the strongest way to do certain things. I'm not trying to advocate or defend Joseph Kony tonight. It would be insane to defend this man. All I'm saying is, if you want to stop him and his kind, and you should, you need to listen to the show tonight. I got some audio clips I'm going to play, and I promise you, the truth that you're going to hear in these six clips, 10 minutes long each, is going to blow your mind. We're going to stop each clip afterwards and talk about it. We're going to go, as the scripture call it, line upon line, precept upon precept, talking about this very wicked man and what he has done. But more importantly, how did this situation come into being? And will there be another Joseph Kony? And if so, how can we stop that? How can we destroy the machine, the system that produced the Joseph Konys of the world? Again, you're listening to Five Smooth Stones. I'm Brother Seth. I want to thank everybody for your time. You could be doing so many other things tonight. For those of you listening, I ask that you please follow the show. We don't get no money. I don't make anything from doing this. All I ask is that people would follow the show, get a reminder into your cell phone or email by clicking on the show. It should be somewhere on that page, reminder. Do that. Follow the show. Like the show, like so many of y'all say. Follow the show. And also, one more thing I'm going to ask you on the front page, if you would click on Five Smooth Stones. Of course, you can't do it right now because you're listening to me, but if you would right-click on where it says Five Smooth Stones, it should say Buy Five Smooth Stones right in front of you. You right-click on Five Smooth Stones and just hit Open Up in a New Tab. While you're listening to me, go ahead and go to the website. It's right there in front of you. It's going to be www.FIVE5smooth.webs.com. FiveSmoothStones.webs.com. Go there and join the site. Check out all the pictures and the audios and the different things we offer. Talking about the five smooth stones, or the five topics, really, we call it. Comes from five topics. And be blessed. Okay? All right, folks. So tonight, we're going to try to jump into this early because there's so much. I got these six clips, and I got to play every single one of them. That's 1 hour. And then we got to be able to comment for about another hour. So I don't want to waste too much time. I want to get right into it. Please, folks. Follow the show, okay? Folks, Africa is not, never have been an easy situation, you know, with it holding the world's resources. No other continent has as many resources as that place. I'm sure nobody's going to argue on that. And when you have that much raw materials and you have these types of raw materials, the governments of the world seek you out, and they paint you, your leaders, to be the bad guy, the thieves. You notice all African leaders are always corrupt. They always want to paint them out to be the bad guy. So when they go after their resources, there won't be an outcry. Africa has to look bad, have to look crippled, have to look dumb, have to look oversexed, always just somewhere. Men always somewhere out of the homes, wives, women leading the families. And this is the picture of Africa. And it almost has to be in order for the people to do what they're trying to do. You and I just got to be smart and not buy the lie, not buy into this white supremacist lie. You have to understand it's just a lie. Africa, civilization started in Africa. I'm not going to go into that much. But you should know that. No matter how great America is, how great Japan is, how great Great Britain is, Germany, however great people think they are, all of their roots is Africa, the place we call Africa. And they can never be better than their origin. You can never be better than your origin. Never can be better than your parents. And Africa is the parents of civilization. So, what's happening in Uganda? Why do you have this man doing the things he's doing? Why is this man building this army consisting of mostly children? Why would anybody do such a thing? Why would anybody do such a thing? Why is this man kidnapping little young girls to be brides to these young boys? What is going on? How does the Most High feel about all this? And why haven't he been caught? How is he able to do what he's been doing for so long? These questions and more, I guarantee you, before tonight is over with, you will have an answer. You listen, take out your notepads, tape recorders, record what you hear in your mind, in your spirit, especially if you start asking the Most High. He's going to reveal it to you. He is the manufacturer, and he knows how all of this works, more so than these clips I'm about to show you. So anyway, I'm just so excited to have some clips that we call Uganda Rising. Uganda Rising. Have y'all heard of Uganda Rising? Uganda Rising is a documentary that is off the chain, one of the best documentaries I have ever seen. It's got 9 parts to it. These people go way back and start talking about how Uganda was one of those African countries, if not the African country with the most resources, and how there has been this race struggle, how it has been just exploited, for lack of a better term, just exploited in every way. They go into it, they go into it, they go into it like nobody goes into it. Again, I've seen lots of documentaries. I don't think I've seen one. And then they have seen one is like this one. And then they have Noam Chomsky on there. You know, I like and love Noam Chomsky. He's always very thorough, and he's the man that they say nobody will debate because he is a walking encyclopedia. So they have the one and only Noam Chomsky on there just firing away. And it's just a great documentary. So go and get your own copy. Just go into Google that movie, and download it to your computer. Have it for your arsenal. Anytime people want to talk about how Africans is just not leading their countries and wicked and greedy and, you know, just bring the science. Bring the science. Show them what time it is. That's what you should do. Just show them what time it is. All right? So, listen, I want to go ahead and start clip number one, but before I do, it's one more thing I thought to do. I apologize. I just thought of this. I want to acknowledge those of you that's already on the phone lines and those of y'all that's already in the chat room. I want to thank you for being on time and being interested in the subject. I always ask this question, who are you to be the type of person this time of night looking at shows like this? Surely you are part of the solution and not the problem. You should be grateful that the Most High have allowed your mind and your spirit to be concerned to even listen to such a thing, especially at the time of night. So especially those of y'all on the East Coast, I want to welcome y'all to the show, and I would love to know your comments. Comment as much as you like. Remember, if you're a guest, you got to be registered with Blog Talk Radio in order to make comments. But let's go ahead and just see and hear this clip. These clips, and let's get it started. And y'all are going to be blessed. Those that's going to come late, unfortunately, they're going to miss part one, because I think part one and two is probably the most important clips, because it set the foundation of what we're about to discuss. So those that missing part one, oh, my goodness, they are missing something. So anyway, want to shout out to a few of the people I see that I know in the chat room. Brother Gabriel is on the phone lines, and then there's some other people in the chat room and so forth. So all of those on the phone line that I don't know, I just forgive me. I just don't know your phone number. But anyway, let's go ahead and get this thing started. And just prayerfully listen. Don't let this clip get you upset, because it can. It sure can. But don't let it. Just try to learn from it. And don't hit the white man, because the white man is not our problem. Black man is not our problem. Joseph Kony, as much as somehow I know I do, just pretty much ain't feeling this guy. I mean, this guy is need to be took out somewhere and just be beat for hours and hours and hours. But even he is not the enemy. Bible said we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, spiritual wickedness in high places. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? Here we go, part one. Uganda Uprising, part one. Check this out, folks. It's coming.
In the late 1980s, the West has come to see Uganda as a model African nation. Economic initiatives have been greatly praised. HIV education policies have been universally applauded. In 1998, American President Bill Clinton called the Ugandan president and former rebel, Yoweri Museveni, a new breed of African leader. For many, President Museveni symbolizes hope for the Africa of tomorrow. But Western praise notwithstanding, all is not well in Uganda. North of Uganda, during that same two decades, Yoweri Museveni's government has been in a bitter military conflict with a rebel group known as the Lord's Resistance Army. Their leader is a self-proclaimed prophet who wants to overthrow the government and install a regime based on the Ten Commandments. Although claiming to be fighting on behalf of his people, he is an Acholi massacring Acholis. His name is Joseph Kony.
When you talk to former LRAs, especially those who have been very close to Kony, like former wives, former commanders, they totally believe that he has supernatural power. So he's got that control over them.
Kony is very difficult to predict. For him, he's a prophet. He cannot be advised. His advice comes from the spirit.
Of all the crimes committed by Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army, they are most known for their abduction of children and through brutality turning those children into killers.
Will be quan ban dong ya tan ya ma go ti ja den bo kan na distan ba ba atong gin wan ya gri ya jen lan kin ma tu yo jing ya wan na wa ti go go wan na ga giu do do ti jo an an be luor ko pi na ni de a go jo wan na ga ga be ni wan.
This person is describing different things they
want to do.
The inhumane terror of the Lord's Resistance Army, combined with the unrelenting military response of the Museveni government, has proved catastrophic for northern Ugandans, the Acholi people in particular, and most horrifically, the Acholi children, suffering conditions barely comprehensible to the average human being. The Museveni government has forcibly displaced 1.5 million people into camps, the majority of them women and children. The Lord's Resistance Army has abducted more than 25,000 children to be used as soldiers, workers, and sex slaves. Twenty years have passed, but who can say when or where the conflict really began? Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl once wrote that under brutality, the best will not return. But life itself is hope. Who will protect the joyous spirit of the child? The healing spirit and beauty of the woman? Who will defend the men who defend these ideals? Northern Uganda may not look like the 100 days in Rwanda or the gas chambers of Europe, but its mix of children, terror, violent religion, poverty, and confinement is without parallel.
The convention defines genocide as a systematic attempt to destroy, in whole or in substantial part, a national, ethnic, or religious group as such. So the idea there is that you target a group, not because of anything any of the individual members of the group have done, but simply because they are members of some undesirable clan.
Not necessarily physically killing every single last Acholi or Tutsi or Jewish person. It's also about stripping away and erasing who they are as a people.
The conflict officially began in 1986 when the first northern rebel movement took up arms against the southern-based Museveni. But the deeper roots of this north-south divide can be traced back to the late 1800s during what was called by the Imperial European powers the scramble for Africa.
Here we go.
Colonization was motivated by the European hunger for African resources. The subsequent exploitation of the African people and the uprooting of their spiritual values by Christian missionaries would leave a permanent European stamp on the continent.
The mindset is the barbarians are backward and inferior, and for their own benefit, we have to uplift them and civilize them and educate them and so on. The psychology behind it is kind of transparent. I mean, when you've got your boot on someone's neck and you're crushing them, you can't say to yourself, I'm a son of a bitch and I'm doing it for my own benefit. So what you have to do is figure out some way of saying, I'm doing it for their benefit. And that's a very natural position to take when you're beating somebody with a club.
Britain cut the largest piece of African cake from Cairo to Cape Town, in addition to Nigeria and a few West African regions. It was also the British Empire that in 1894 imposed an arbitrary boundary around the many diverse ethnic groups and kingdoms that would make up Uganda. The southern Bantu-speaking people were given economic, political, and educational advantage. The northern ethnic groups, two in particular, the Acholi and the Langi, were the main recruits for military and police positions. By exploiting linguistic, ethnic, and cultural differences between the peoples of the North and South, Britain's divide and rule policies created a tension between them that helped maintain British rule. The French took an east-west slice of the continent as well as Madagascar. The Belgians took Rwanda, Burundi, and the Congo in what Joseph Conrad called the vilest scramble for loot that ever disfigured the history of human conscience. Slave labor took over 5 million lives. In Rwanda, Belgium entrenched the idea of the Hutu as a workforce and the Tutsi as extenders of Belgian rule. The politicization of these two cultures would profoundly contribute to the genocide of 1994. In Sudan, the British ruled the Arabs in the north and the blacks in the south as separate colonies, only to combine the areas before independence in 1956. The result has been relentless civil war, the Darfur massacres being the latest tragedy. The Portuguese decimated Angola, Mozambique, and Guinea-Bissau well into the 1970s. The Italians took Libya, Eritrea, and Somalia.
My goodness, my goodness. I know y'all was eating that up. My goodness. Did y'all see that? Darfur, the Rwanda situation, all of these things created, inspired by Europeans, flat out. If you do a little bit more research on that, you'll get a whole lot more than what he was saying. He was just trying to give you a little tidbit, but I'm telling y'all, you got to really look into that. When I talk about that in the past, this video, again, I'm telling you, y'all, this video is the bomb. It's called, again, Uganda Rising. Uganda Rising. What you might want to do is if you want to see what he is saying, because some of these clips, you can't see. You just hear the audio. So I'll tell you what number I'm playing. First of all, if some of y'all quickly want to go to Google and type in Uganda Rising as he's talking, you guys could be seeing what he's talking about. And then, of course, when the clip comes to an end, we can discuss it. And then we'll do the next for the next clip. I'll tell you what clip I'm going to play. That was just clip number one. I'm getting ready to play clip number two. There are six clips. And so what you want to do is just type in Uganda Rising, R-I-S-I-N-G. And then you can even type clip number one, two, or whatever. But we're just going to go in order. With 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way up to, now I look at it, it's 9 of them. So we're going to play every one of these clips. If there's any questions or comments about what you're hearing, you guys got to let me know. Y'all got to talk to me. Press 1 on the phone lines, and we will discuss your question or comment after that particular clip is over with. Again, we will discuss your question or comment after that particular clip is over with, okay? Because we want to get all the clips in, all right? So please, folks, let's do this. Let's ask questions if that's what you need, and otherwise, just listen and let's get educated, okay? Here we go. This is clip number two of Uganda Rising. Uganda Rising, and let's see. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. The Germans added Cameroon and Tanzania and committed the first genocide of the 20th century against the Herero people.
No colonial power is going to succeed unless it's going to play on existing divisions and sharpen them, increase them, exacerbate them. So one of the first questions after the end of colonialism is who belongs and who didn't? Who was part of the colonial struggle and who betrayed? And this is time to settle scores.
It was this colonial legacy that Uganda carried forth into its independence in 1962. Milton Obote, a northerner, was named Uganda's first prime minister. In 1971, with the help of Israel and Britain, Obote was overthrown by his top military commander, the notorious Idi Amin.
Did y'all get that? Did y'all hear that?
With the entire world looking on, Amin's regime descended Uganda into chaos. For their assumed allegiance to Milton Obote, Idi Amin had thousands of Acholi and Langi soldiers slaughtered.
Right from independence, the leaders did not do enough to unite the people in this country. Instead, exploited these differences for their own personal gain.
Wanting to rid Uganda of Amin's tyranny, Yoweri Museveni spent the 1970s building resistance militias both inside and outside Uganda.
The African decline does not begin until the 70s, well over a decade after independence. It coincides with a particular twist in the Cold War, increasing external pressure, the coming in of the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, structural adjustment programs.
The World Bank gets countries to borrow up to their necks, you know, usually third world dictators. And then when they can't pay, then the IMF comes in and says, okay, you got to pay for it with structural adjustment programs. I mean, the poor people who suffer from structural adjustment, they didn't borrow the money. They didn't get anything out of it. And what happened in Africa was happening all over the world.
Amin was overthrown in 1979, but it was Milton Obote who returned to power in what Museveni called a rigged election. In opposition, Museveni disappeared into the bush and formed the rebel National Resistance Army, or NRA.
The National Resistance Movement is fighting for the aims of the whole country and not for aims of a section of the country. Secondly, the National Resistance Movement is a democratic movement.
Museveni rebels took power in 1986. Thousands of defeated Acholi and Langi soldiers, fearing retribution for atrocities committed during the Civil War, fled north.
The president did not like the Acholi people, who had dominated the army and the military. So when the president took over power in 1986, he told us that you Acholis, I'm going to put you in a bottle, like grasshopper. You see a grasshopper, if you put a grasshopper in a bottle, and I will block that bottle, you will see outside and not be able to get out. You look for food and not get it, so you start eating yourself.
Although several northern rebel groups formed in opposition to Museveni, only one had a spiritual component. Before there was Joseph Coyne and the Lord's Resistance Army, there was Alice Lequena and the Holy Spirit movement.
Alice Lequena's thing was that the Acholi people were very sinful, and she came to correct that. Again, it goes to spiritual. Alice Lequena will tell you exactly what time they're coming, to which area they're going to attack. And true to their word, you'll see them coming with branches of trees, carrying AK-47, and singing hymns. And Coyne did exactly the same. And this just terrified government troops.
In October of 1987, after a number of surprising military successes, Alice Lequena's forces were demolished by Museveni's National Resistance Army just north of Kampala. Once shunned by Alice Lequena, Joseph Coyne and the Lord's Resistance Army soon became the main rebel force in northern Uganda, with Coyne recruiting some of Lequena's forces and even channeling her main spirit. But Coyne did not prove to be as popular with the people as Lequena, and resorted to coercion, abduction, and terror to build his army. At the same time, the Acholi people suffered continued intimidation by Museveni's National Resistance Army. According to Amnesty International, in the last months of 1988, government troops forcibly displaced an estimated 100,000 northern civilians from their homes, with hundreds executed without trial. But in 1990, the North was not President Museveni's only problem. Under political pressure, Museveni reversed an earlier decision to grant citizenship to refugees who had lived in Uganda for at least 10 years. Months later, thousands of Tutsi Rwandan refugees who had fought for Museveni in his rise to power but were now excluded from citizenship deserted the Ugandan army and in a covert mission invaded Rwanda, their former homeland.
It was an armed expulsion. They were given all the help that they wanted, but they were told that you will not come back. There were several opening chapters to the genocide in Rwanda, but this was the most important one.
800,000 Rwandans would be massacred in 100 days. That same year in northern Uganda, early 1994, Betty Bagombe was attempting to negotiate peace between the Ugandan government and the Lord's Resistance Army. With government officials brought in, meetings took place in secret locations deep in the Ugandan bush.
The girls and children I found were the most brutal. They didn't even blink, they stared. You greet them, they don't respond. They just look at you. You're sitting there and you have little boys of 11, 12 years old guiding you with machete. And then behind them, you're surrounded with these boys with their AK-47, their hands on the trigger all the time. The first time that Coyne was coming to see me, I saw dust in these bushes. That group was moving in. You saw the group out here started singing Christian songs. Some of them were falling down, collapsing, that they were demons and being lifted, taken away. Others came in, and the moment was just, it was like a whirlwind.
As peace talks continued, Museveni allegedly received intelligence information that Coyne was secretly negotiating with the Sudanese government for arms. Sudan would later claim that they were supporting the LRA in response to Museveni's support for Sudanese rebels, who were led by Museveni's university friend, the late John Garang. Still, the peace talks were progressing. LRA atrocities had stopped, and Coyne had begun to discuss with Betty Bagombe ways to reintegrate himself and his rebels back into a Acholi society.
In 1994, we thought peace had finally returned when Betty Bagombe had made a breakthrough with talks with the LRA, and it was just a matter of time. Actually, the LRA had, they would even come to town, do their shopping, they would even visit military barracks, you know, and with their guns and anything. And
okay. What did y'all think of that? A lot happened in that clip. I'm telling you, those first two clips is key in understanding this whole thing. So let me back up a little bit, because we got several people new in the phone lines and in the chat room. A few people came since we started clip number one. Briefly, let me just kind of go over what's happened, since some of y'all may not even know anything about this warlord called Joseph Kony, or Cohen, it's Kony. First and foremost, there was a white gentleman, a Caucasian gentleman, who took an interest in this a good while back, and he was moved by a testimony. He was moved by this young black boy describing the atrocities, how he had lost his brother, and how that even talking to this white man about the past brought pain. And he really didn't want to talk to him. He kind of let him know, I don't really want to talk about this. And that touched this gentleman. and that gentleman would be the one to go on and start the organization called Invisible Children. This is the organization responsible for the now infamous video that's circulating throughout Facebook world to millions and have got a lot of young people involved, okay? This gentleman is responsible for that after listening to this young black boy cry in front of him. Let me just break down and cry. Since then, the young black boy has been to, and I forget the names, I do have names here of a lot of people, but I didn't happen to get those names, but trust me, it's all over the internet. All you got to type in is Invisible Children. They have been so effective with networking. I mean, they have put a whole new, kind of like what Obama did, but on another level. These people, it's just, my hat is off to the Invisible Children organization, how they have really got, they even got Congress to send 100 troops over to Uganda to help the Ugandan government find this Joseph, this warlord, Joseph Kony. But as y'all heard, Kony is not the only one. There were several organizations that have been trying to rid Uganda of these people that have been trying to rape that country for a very long time. You heard the mention of Alice Lakwene. It's Lakwene, Lakwene. Alice Lakwene called her organization the Holy Spirit Movement. And Wikipedia does a pretty good job of talking about this. You know, you can't trust Wikipedia. You have to, I always say you got to go to the organization itself. They're online. But Wikipedia is very thorough because it talks about it, links Alice Lakwene and Joseph Kony and this guy, the president, Museveni, links them all together and you can understand what's going on. But basically, these are freedom fighters, every single one of them. The one that Bill Clinton said, this is a new president for Africa, a new heading, a new direction, something to that effect. He's talking about this Museveni. But Museveni was one of those that, you know, was involved in a coup to overthrow the government. I mean, it's just a lot of fighting for power in these smaller countries. It's all there is to it. And the bigger countries are more sophisticated, but the same spirit. But anyway, this Joseph Kony is the one that's getting a lot of attention right now because he have amassed this very, very large army, and mostly of children. And then he has been said, I don't know how true it is, that he goes out and grab young girls for these young boys, these men that he have, these young boys, some of them of which are now men. So, again, I vehemently disagree with this man. I vehemently disagree with his spirit. I think this is a murdering spirit. I don't agree at all with Joseph Kony as far as how he is going about righting the wrongs of the Europeans that are there, who is responsible for millions and millions of lives, millions of people being in poverty. And when you have poverty, poverty, as y'all know very well, looking at the hood in the States, when you have poverty, you get everything else. And when you have poverty, poverty adds to other situations, other deaths. You know, and some people may live through poverty, but they are the walking dead in spirit, and that creates all kinds of things. So, the Europeans is responsible for literally millions of lives, not the tens of thousands that Joseph Kony is responsible for. And you're gonna hear this in the next clips. I'm telling y'all, y'all about to really hear something. But I want to just kind of touch on a few things we mentioned already, so y'all will just, because they talk kind of quick. Did y'all hear the lady? There was a lady that came to try to bring them together, and she was describing how when Joseph Kony came with his people out of the bush, she mentioned this cloud of dust. I don't know if y'all heard that, but she was saying she was a moderator that came to bring these groups together, and she was talking about when they came out of the bush, there was all this singing. I'm not talking about Alice Lakwene. and the Holy Spirit movement. They sung all the time. It's the craziest thing. There's this woman leading these group of this militia, kind of like Harriet Tubman, but not, of course, Harriet Tubman had a much better reason and style. But this woman leading these men, and they would sing, and they called themselves the Holy Spirit Movement, and she felt like she was called by God to go in and to deal with this Acholi people, the Acholi people, which is in the northern part of Sudan. The Acholi and the Langi is in the northern part of Uganda. Excuse me. The Acholi and the Langi, L-A-N-G-I, is in the northern part, and the Bantu is in the southern part. That's mostly who dwells in Uganda. So she called herself cleansing the Acholi people with this militia group. Well, later on, Joseph Kony and his group defeat her, all right, and some of her people joined his group. Now, remember, he proclaims himself to be a prophet. And I was saying earlier that this moderator was trying to bring them together, and when they came, his group got there. It was hundreds of them. She was talking about how they were singing. Remember, Alice Laquina's group sung also. This is crazy. Militia groups carrying machetes and AKs, singing and just massacre. It's just crazy. It's the craziest thing I've ever. I don't think I've heard anything as wild as this. But anyway, these people, main job, what they're really trying to do is rid the country of sellouts. Anybody that is going to be for the government in the way they have been just allowing strangers, Europeans, to come in there and just take the land, you know, working with the government or spying, you know, what they call them in the hood when somebody comes to run to the police. But that's what these people, that's who they really was after. They really could not stomach Ugandans, you know, going in and just reporting everything they did to the government, because that's when the government came in and did what they do. So this is a very, very, very twist of it. Just a bunch of different twists in this whole story of Joseph Kony. But hopefully audio 1 and 2 was able to give you an understanding of who he is, but they're not done. Believe me, they're not done, nowhere near done. But I just want to just kind of highlight some of the parts of this first audio and the second audio, and to give you the Facebook intro to how this came about. So Facebook is just on fire right now with Joseph Kony. They have made their mind up that they're going to get him within 2012. And believe me, when you get that many young, I hate to be so sound so racist, but it's just the truth. When white people start to cry out, things get done, because their words have more value than other people. People have been crying out in the international communities through all types of marches, going to the UN. They've been talking about this Joseph Kony. They've been talking about this whole system of exploitation in Africa by the Europeans, and there have been no cry, none. Nobody have paid them no mind. Then all of a sudden, this black boy cries in front of this gentleman, and it touches his heart, and he tells this young black boy, we're going to get him. We're going to go get him, and that sparks this whole movement, okay? And, I mean, I applaud the young man, because he didn't have to do anything. Talking about the white gentleman, my white brother, I applaud him for sure. But I'm just saying, I guess what I'm saying is we need more like him, and we need him sooner than now. We need him 25 years ago. This has been going on in Africa, and I was just so glad to hear them talk about how the Europeans had a hand in even the Rwanda situation. But it's actually more clear than what they just did in audio one. Maybe one day I'll do a show on Rwanda and just show and bring a lot of things to light that some of you may or may not know. Blatant, almost criminal actions by our government in allowing these people to die. 800,000 in 100 days. That is mind-boggling. 800,000 in 100 days. Can y'all imagine that? And this video that we're listening to is called Uganda Rising. Do not listen to it if you eat. Do not watch these videos if you're eating, or do not probably allow some of your, do not allow children to see it, because they show people's head cracked open, brain spilled out. They don't hold back. This video is strong documentary of what's going on in the motherland. So y'all really need to be on board with this, okay, and do your part in helping bring this gentleman to justice. But do your part also in telling the whole story, and let's not let this be a white supremacist type of twist and making all these people in black in Africa look like they're just warlords, when in fact they are the ones, Europeans, powerful Europeans, leaders, powerful European leaders is the one that is responsible. Partially responsible in initiating this in the very first place. I know it's tight, but it's right. Here goes clip number 3. I'm telling y'all, don't go nowhere. You want to hear this. You want to hear this and tell people about these clips, because they're hearing about the video that's going across YouTube. They're actually getting part of the truth. My son actually is the one that brought this up. He was the one that Josiah brought this to my attention. He's 21 years old. He was moved by this video. And it's amazing how these people can get to your children when you can't. And he got the truth, and I just listened at first because he was talking about how these black people was killing up each other. He even said that Joseph Kony was raping these people, these kids, he had it a little bit wrong. Well, Joseph Kony is not raping all of these folks. He recruiting these young boys to be in his army, and he recruit the girls against their will to be these boys' wives. Now, I know it sounds like I'm defending him. I'm not. The guy is needing to be. He need one night with me for real. In the back alley. That's what I feel like, me personally. People like that just need a good beat down. I'm serious. I mean, a strong beat down. But I don't agree with this guy whatsoever. But I understand his pain. He is tired of the exploitation. He is tired of seeing death already. He is tired of seeing rapes already. And out of him seeing all of this raping of his resources and seeing not only natural resources rapings, but probably rapings of his women by Europeans. Well, all this stuff goes on. And if you don't believe me, just get some Ugandans and talk to them about their experiences and with with people that come to that land. I mean, even if they come there and cause this prostitution because of poverty, anytime you have poverty, there's prostitution. And show me a country that's poor, and I'll show you a country high in prostitution. All of this stuff is a form of rape and a form of exploitation. This Joseph Kony and Alice Laquini and even the president himself, Museveni, all these people are painfully tired of the Europeans, but they are driven, some of them are driven beyond, I think, they just get out there like insanity type stuff. You know, and they're trying to sanction it with the Lord and God and the Holy Spirit, and they're singing hymns, but they're killing people, and they're killing innocent people sometimes. And so this is what happened. Just thank the Most High. We have it as good as we have it. I mean, at least we can think without death. Death is like final. I mean, if you take a life, I mean, that's it. So at least, you know, we're exploited too in the United States, where we at least can have blogs and websites that we can talk about and express and try to influence the oppressors to do something different. But when you have folks killing 800,000 people in 100 days, that's just like massacring everybody you see, chopping. They was chopping off heads, and that stuff was just, but anyway. So, again, we're talking about tonight. Before I play clip number 3, the video, Uganda Rising. Again, if y'all want to go to YouTube and type in Uganda Rising and go to clip number 3, you can see, as I play the audio, you can just let yours play and mute yours where you can hear what's going on with the show and you can see some of these horrific images. I mean, I'm telling y'all, it's going to really, really take this whole show to another level if you can see what they're saying. Go to Uganda Rising, number 3. Just type in Uganda Rising, space 3, and you'll be able to listen to what, you'll be able to see, rather, what I'm playing audibly. Okay? So let's go ahead and start up Uganda Rising, clip number 3, and take a lot of notes. Let me know if you have any questions or comments. Press 1 on the phones. If you're on the phone line, if you're in the chat room, just go ahead and type your question. Here's clip number 3.
You'd not even hear of any attack. Not even a single day. Neither would you hear bullets.
Kony had written that he wanted people to start getting used to him, to start seeing him, because people... Some people even questioned whether he really existed. And to me, nothing better had happened. Immediately there was hope. I went to the president very excited that this is the deal on Saturday. And it was at that moment in time that he said, no, I'm tired of this peace process.
I know there are those who think that you can talk and the problem just gets solved by talking. Unfortunately, I don't believe like that. Sometimes you may have to use a force to solve a problem.
Peace talks collapsed. Even worse, Sudan not only armed the Lord's Resistance Army, but let them set up military bases inside Sudan. This combination proved deadly for northern Ugandans. Believing the Acholi people were collaborating with the Museveni government, the LRA's objective of overthrowing Museveni to install a regime based on the Ten Commandments degraded even further into a campaign of massacre and mutilation against the civilian population.
Children are the primary object for abduction by the Lord's Resistance Army. So when children should be in school or should be in their community, they are being taken and forced to fight a war. And when the fighting goes on and the so-called combatants die or are harmed, these are children.
By 1996, colliding events across East Africa would widen the divide between southern and northern Uganda. In May, Museveni easily won the election despite refusing multi-party politics, negligible support in the north, and an inability to stop LRA attacks on civilians. Then came unconfirmed intelligence reports that the Lord's Resistance Army might be forming dangerous alliances with not only Museveni opponents in the north, but also the refugee Hutu extremists in the Congo, who had orchestrated the Rwandan genocide. In this threatening atmosphere, President Museveni made a decision that will forever be part of his legacy.
Watch this, watch this.
Museveni ordered hundreds of thousands of Acholi and other northern civilians, the majority women and children, to be forcibly herded into internal displacement camps. Ostensibly, to protect the population from the LRA, these camps lacked even the most basic necessities. Worse, terror by the Lord's Resistance Army increased.
When there have been a lot of attacks on the camps, the people were very suspicious. Why were they not being protected? Yet the camps were meant to be for protection. Why are they still being abducted, their children being abducted and some being killed? So it caused a lot of suspicion in the minds of the people about the government.
Well, if you take the three districts in Acholiland, the government has put more than 90% of the population in camps, forced incarceration, without providing them any support. Any. Right? No food, no medicine, nothing.
Check this out. Check this out, y'all.
If anything, this can turn out to be one-stop center where the rebels could come and do whatever they wanted to do. They could loot property, they could rape women, they could abduct children, they could kill. So the government, actually, without perhaps desiring it, has made the work of the rebels easier.
People didn't like coming to camp. They were forced by the army people to come and live in the camp. It was not part of their will. They are living within the camp. They don't cultivate. They depend on the World Food Program.
Without access to farmland, the Acholi people are dependent on the World Food Program for survival. But the World Food Program is unable to get the Ugandan military to guarantee protection or commit to a schedule for the delivery of food.
It is frustrating on our part because we don't want food to be delayed. Sometimes the average of 5 or 6 times in a month. So you can just imagine. People have to suffer unnecessarily. That means that people have to be hungry for several days.
Of the 30 countries worldwide in which the World Food Program operates, it is only in northern Uganda that a military escort is required.
In other countries, you could negotiate your safe passage. Here, it's a different ballgame. We are totally dependent on the military escort. But we are also hoping that the LRA will not ambush us on the roads. Because if they really want us to create problems for us, they can do so.
When the camps were created, it completely disrupted the gendered division of labor because men could no longer work and they certainly didn't have a political voice in things. What happened was you had men become completely disempowered, lose their identity not just as Acholi but also as men. The only way that they could continue to feel like they had any kind of power was vis-a-vis the women. So they could at least say, this is my woman and you will do this for me. All of this is compounded by the fact that in order to fill their day or despair, men have turned to drink. And there's a high prevalence of alcoholism in the camp, which women brew, which intensifies the level of anxiety and agitation that men feel, which is again then unleashed on women and children in the form of violence.
Displacement camps, as a way of life, become a breeding ground for hopelessness. There are no means of self-sustenance, disease is rife, internal protection is minimal, and more children become principal caregivers. But it is the LRA's mode of violence that leaves the people physically terrorized and permanently scarred.
If you look at Pabo Camp, which is having 66,000 people, how many soldiers would you need to give them maximum security? We don't have those soldiers. So the camp is protected, that's why people are there, but it's not 100% protected.
In an effort to increase protection in the camps, local defense units or militias were formed from local males, returned abducted LRA rebels, and sometimes even children under 18.
This is the child soldier. He's basically talking about how he has
protected, been drafted as a soldier, and he's used to fighting.
Major problem.
They use him like a security guard.
Paid. So they turn against their own people. They're in search of food. They start stealing. They start committing some atrocities. And in some cases where massacres have happened, they're not well trained. So they take off. They're the first to run when they see LRA coming.
Okay, folks, that was clip number 3. And again, that last little bit was a soldier, young boy. He just looked, I wish y'all could, again, y'all should go to YouTube. And when I tell y'all the clip number, which we're about to go look at 4, you should click on Uprise Uganda Rising, Uganda Rising number 4. Just Uganda Rising space 4. And you can see, as I'm playing it, keep your audio on, keep me on, and mute your YouTube and just watch the video. I'm telling y'all, this stuff is really interesting, even if you're not one to be interested in politics. It's very interesting to see what is going on in Uganda. I mean, it has really got me interested. And it's just amazing how the United States and Britain and Germany, all of these pretty much white countries, I hate to say it, but that's what they all got in common. There's no black countries doing it, pretty much. They just control these countries from the Capitol House to the outhouse. They run these countries. It's just amazing. And when you see a lot of this pain, they're behind it. They're behind it. I told my daughter, you know, because she was interested in this, because, again, the Facebook is getting all these young people in it. Never have. This probably is the biggest political thing that Facebook been involved with since Obama. And I hate to say it, but I think there's more people involved with this than the Obama campaign, because this is a worldwide thing. Australia is involved. Germany is involved. Italy is involved. I mean, every young person that have access to YouTube is involved with this. Getting rid of this guy by 2012. As a matter of fact, they say that in 2012 they're going to destroy the video. If they don't get him, they're going to just give up the whole thing. And I'm telling you, the United States Army ain't going to watch these Caucasians basically go without their dreams fulfilled. They're going to go into their little country and they're going to just go through it and find whoever this gentleman is, wherever he's at, and he will, trust me, it is, we need it. Well, I shouldn't say we need it. America needs this kind of thing just to keep its morale up. So they'll find him. He just don't know. He is in hot water. All they got to do is put out a bounty on his head, just say $1 million for whoever catch him. And they don't, their loyalty is not that strong. Some of his top guys would turn him in. Did y'all hear earlier how Israel, speaking of top guys, did you hear earlier how Idi Amin was put in place by the Israelis and Britain? I did not know that. I know some of y'all probably knew it and said, oh, you didn't know that? I did not know that. All of that grief, all of that pain, all that bad publicity Uganda got over Idi Amin and Israel and Britain, that was their man. Ain't that something? But Idi Amin was one of those presidents. I mean, yes, he massacred a whole lot of his loyalists to the gentleman that preceded him. However, he was 100% for the development of Africa, kind of like Muammar Gaddafi was. I know y'all probably believe the other news about him, but you need to study that brother. That man right there was pro-Africa, probably stronger than any black leader have ever been since Haile Selassie. I mean, Gaddafi is responsible for the African conference. It's kind of like the UN conference and many other things, heavy duty did in that Sahara. But anyway, Idi Amin was kind of like, it was totally for Africa. And he put to death any of his citizens that basically didn't think like that. I mean, not didn't think like that, but anybody that tried to overthrow him, obviously, he's going to put them to death. But this guy just did not play with Europeans. He did not play with anybody that was not for the prosperity of Africa, and that's why they hated him. And I'll tell you where I got a lot of this from. I went to Australia some time back, and I was in, can't even think of the place. It wasn't Sydney. I'll think of it in a minute. But I was talking with a gentleman there, and he was saying, he was talking about Idi Amin. We got to talk about Idi Amin. He was from Uganda. And he started to share things. He said, Idi Amin is nothing like, we don't look at him like y'all look at him. And I said, what do you mean? This guy was a murderer. He was hated. Nobody liked this guy. And so he was talking about why people hated him and how, what kind of president he was, because he ruled under this. I mean, this guy lived in Uganda under this man's rule, okay? So he was telling about different things he would do to the reporters, like he, one of the things he did that was very funny, and the international media, of course, didn't talk about it that much, but this was probably something some of y'all know, how he would make the media, he would tell them that it was custom that they crawl to the king, and it wasn't even their custom. He just made them crawl. So there they are with the cameras and stuff crawling up to him to get an interview, and the people in the back just laughing at him, you know, and they thinking this is just the way they do. It's just kind of one of the little things he did just to humiliate Europeans, because he had a hatred for them, a flat-out hatred for Europe, seeing what they'd done with that continent. And so that was Mugabe, same in Zimbabwe, same type of president. He's just like Idi Amin, and that's why they paint these guys to be bad guys. So it's hard to tell who the good guys are and who the bad guys are if you listen to the world media. The Gaddafi was getting ready to introduce a dollar, that's our money. He was getting ready to introduce an African currency, and I did a show on him. Check out the show that I did on Gaddafi. You're going to hear something completely different with a lot of hard facts. And even a lot of economists were saying what I'm saying. I'm not just making this stuff up. But Gaddafi was getting ready to really cause the United States some problems had he introduced this currency that was going to be backed by gold. Because, as y'all know, we got gold, but not enough to really be sitting up trading with it. Africa does, on the other hand. And so this would have changed the whole game where currency is concerned, and that's why they had him killed as soon as he started talking about that. But anyway, let's listen to clip number 4 because we've got several more to go. I'm telling y'all, before I do this, anybody got any questions or comments, please let me know in the chat room. Say something, do something. Good to see you, Runaway Slave, and those y'all on the phone lines. Let me know again if you have any questions or comments. All right. All of y'all's guests, the guests, of course, I can't see your name. I don't know who you are. It just says guests, so welcome to the show. And let's go ahead and listen to clip number 4. I'm telling you, it's getting better and better. Watch this, clip number 4, Uganda Rising. Again, go to YouTube, and you can see the video as we play this. Type in Uganda Rising, number 4, and you can see. You're missing out a whole lot by not seeing a lot of these kids express themselves and stuff, okay? Here we go.
Hey, she got an Argentina and why you know the Fanta Tenena. Fanta, yeah, but I didn't know. Near Gison, Hulutia, cannot see him sin anova. None of them take up an attitude, say, yeah, Yoko. Tadino don't get going there. Pan can I get it out of Dora Duom? Can I get out of Dora Duom? Fanta, who called Duom, and never, then never an alarm. Along, 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 along,
along, along,
along, along, along, along,
along, along, along, along, along, along, along, along,
families.
One of the things we've seen with Darfur and the massive killing and rape and ethnic cleansing that has gone on there is that policymakers have spent almost as much time debating whether or not the word genocide should apply to the horrors as they have debating which tools should be applied to stop the horrors. And that's very convenient, actually, it turns out, for governments.
To me, whether we call it genocide or not is not really the key question right now, simply because there is such a politics around naming genocide or not, that sometimes the effect of that politics is to detract attention from the situation and to focus it on the debate. I'd rather focus attention on the situation.
Despite proclamations by Museveni's government since 1986 that the conflict was nearly over, by 2001, an estimated 500,000 civilians had been displaced, the majority women and children. Camps were rampant with inner violence, rape, STDs, HIV, and malnutrition. Even more disturbing, upwards of 10,000 children had been abducted into the Lord's Resistance Army. It would be difficult to conceive how the situation could get any worse.
After 9/11, first thing I said is that every power system in the world is going to use this as an opportunity to extend whatever repression and violence it's carrying out. That's what happens when a catastrophe takes place. And it's pretty much what happened.
After the unprecedented terrorist attacks on U.S. soil in 2001, the face of global politics changed. American enemies and allies were redefined by their position on the war on terror.
For the U.S., Uganda was simply a frontline state in the war on terror. And that front line being the border between Uganda and Sudan. And so the U.S. was going to support Museveni, no matter what Museveni did inside the country.
3 months after 9/11, the U.S. government placed the Lord's Resistance Army, who are believed to be more than 80% abducted children, on their list of terrorist organizations. For the first time, children are officially labeled terrorists.
It affects us because today we are living in a global village. We are under terrorism like any other people can be. But the terrorism we are having in Uganda is not the same as the 9/11 terrorism, because ours is by our own people, abducting our own children.
When they are rescued, they say, we've rescued children. When these children are killed, they say, we've killed terrorists, because government doesn't want to accept responsibility for killing children.
Terror is terror, no matter who it comes from, whether from a child or from an adult. You are a terrorist because you are effectively unleashing terror on innocent people.
In March of 2002, with American support, Museveni's government unleashed Operation Iron Fist, an all-out military assault against the Lord's Resistance Army.
Our differences on the methods of Operation Iron Fist was whether it was a rescue mission or it was an outright massacre.
The government's attempt to finish the conflict by all-out attacks on LRA sites in southern Sudan failed. Hundreds of thousands more civilians were displaced. COIN and the LRA rebels were pushed back into Uganda from Sudan, and abductions rose from 91 people in 2001 to a catastrophic 7,800 in 2002.
Oh, Namakamboe.
He's showing different war shots. Different shots of war, people beheaded. I mean, it's very, very explicit.
Every morning across Acholiland, something remarkable happens. In cities, camps, and villages, in a part of Uganda forgotten by the world, children face the day as if to live this way is normal. Children who have never known peace. And every day, in the wreckage of traditional structures and the absence of parental guidance, they clean, they cook, they scavenge to survive. And when these chores are done, they gather up faded, torn books and notepads and make their way to school.
Managing a home, even for adults, it's not simple. There are certain decisions that really need time and need sharing. A man and a woman. But imagine a situation. You're a child and you're ahead of a family. If you are going to school, how will you get your means of survival?
The traditional leaders used to look after the orphans. They would provide for them homes until they grow up. They become part of the family. But that is not happening now because the chiefs themselves are living in camps, and therefore that respect is even not there, because in the past we used to protect our people and provide for them. But it is the reverse now. People are providing for us. People will just look at you that.
Okay, that was the end of that clip. This is going to be clip number 5. And, folks, I'm just going to keep this coming at you. I know that y'all can be listening to these clips on your own, but it's good to be listened to with me, because we're coming here and there, and some of y'all may want to open up the conversation and share your opinion. But it's very interesting to listen. I mean, I know there was a lot of time where you just couldn't hear nothing but music, but you need to find the time and listen to this on the internet, and especially that clip number 4, because a lot of music played. You missed a lot of scenes. So don't forget to look at clip number 4 on the internet, Uganda Rising, clip number 4. This is coming clip number 5, so go ahead and get it set up on YouTube and mute it and then listen to it over the show, and that way we'll be all looking at this at the same time. I know y'all going to want to comment soon, but I'm kind of glad y'all not coming so we can go through these videos pretty quickly. And it looked like no questions is in the chat room. You're there, and you're staying there. Good. You know, we still got several people in the chat room. Let's see here. Okay. All right. Never mind. So anyway, folks, let's go ahead and finish listening to this. And just want to appreciate y'all for being even interested, because truly that is what's got this guy on the run right now. People being concerned, listening on Facebook. All of these young people is just blowing my mind how my daughter ain't interested in nothing but just singing and all these little, you know, these little singers out here. She's not interested in nothing serious like that. But my son and daughter, who this is way not their cup of tea, but they are interested. Your children probably will come to you about this Joseph Kony. I'm telling you, it's all throughout the school. This is the biggest thing I've seen young people involved with, even bigger than Obama, because these are underage kids I'm talking about. So my son is 21, but my daughter's 15, and she's very nervous. She said, I want y'all to watch this. And if you got 15-year-olds talking like that, it's no wonder they have over 50 million people that have watched this video. So this thing is big. They're going to bring this man to justice, because when you get this many young white Americans crying out for anything, they're going to get it. So, but I want to share the light on what produced these kinds of people. And so let's just go ahead and listen to these other clips, and because they're very informative and they share different light on who this guy is, more so than what the media is sharing. Media is very biased. They're always looking for their, you know, America always looking for their little way to set up some type of puppet regime. You just never can trust what the media is saying. But this is straight. This is documentary. It's unbiased. It says both. I think it's unbiased anyway. Here you go, clip number 5, Uganda Rising, clip number 5.
Should have been protecting them and providing for them, and yet you can't do that.
Western education and religion represent for northern Ugandans both a path forward into the developed world and the further erosion of their traditional cultures. Whether this new world will be open to them remains to be seen. President Museveni's program of free universal primary education is a great step forward. Unfortunately, a quarter of all primary age children in war-torn regions do not attend school at all. In the higher grades, where fees are mandatory, it is often the girls who are left behind. And still, against all odds, the children's desire to go to school is undeniable. At the end of every day, as night looms and the likelihood of LRA terror and abduction increases, a startling phenomenon occurs across the Choli land. A river of children, as many as 30,000 strong, begin a haunting migration from camps and villages towards the relative safety of the nearest city or town. Known as the night commuters, they will walk for hours to sleep in abandoned buildings, under verandas, in churches, schools, parks, bus stops, or designated shelters.
I first went to one of the locations where they stay when the sun was still out but starting to go down. And children are walking rather slowly. They were laughing. They were talking to each other, but they were walking. And more children kept coming, and then the numbers got greater. And then as the darker it got, the children stopped walking and started running. And then they started running faster.
Choosing this exhausting daily exodus over chronic vulnerability to LRA attack is testimony to the human longing for something as simple as sleep. Yet even amongst the commuters, safety is not guaranteed. Violence and rape occur, as do casual sex and the consequent spread of STDs and HIV, with rates significantly higher than the rest of the country.
Parents are all dead. They were killed by the rebels in 1998. I was with them, but I was still young and they left me. Working every day is tiresome. from here to home is 1.5 hours. I started doing that many years ago.
The reason why they kill people, I don't know. But when they find you, they just kill you. They kill you. Killing is the only thing.
Children come to sleep in town. You don't know what they do on the way. And that is how, most especially the girl child, it's really a terrible risk. This is how they get men. No, they decide to elope because that may be one of the solutions to their problem. If a man can give you feeding, somewhere someone can house you. That is one very important thing. House you and give you food. Why not go for that person?
When I actually went into the place and saw where the children had to stay at night, children who you could see in corners trying to study, children just packed together, sleeping on the floor. It was a sight that I don't recall ever seeing anywhere, knowing that these children actually have family, have parents, and yet they can't stay with them.
These are the night commuters who are coming to protect themselves against the rebels. I want to be alive because I don't want this political instability to be there, and I don't want my fellow children to be suffering like this one.
We just decided to go there, and we organized ourselves as actually religious leaders, this initiative. We said we all go to sleep. All of us went there, all the top leaders. We saw the really bitter situation the children were going through. The first night we were there, there was a terrible shooting for nearly 1 hour. The children were looking at us whether we were going to move, but we refused to move. We laid down with them, and they did not move. At 1 o'clock, 1 a.m., there was heavy downpour. We had to all of us get up, run to look for a place under the veranda. But then all the verandas were filled with the children. What we noticed was many of them were coughing so badly. You know, walking long distances, tired, hungry, and some of them with this bronchitis or whatever. And it was very terrible.
I fear because I fear that if I sleep here and they come and kill me, I feel very, very, very mature. My grammar is so enough. And the children from there, if they come and kill me, who can tell us?
There has been an ambush. These guys have just been shot. And these are some of the casualties. Just children. Wow.
Again, they're just interviewing children and they're telling about their experiences. I'm gonna turn this down just for a little bit.
But these are young people just talking about their experiences on the streets. You know, this is just crazy, y'all. And I'll tell you another thing you can do. Type in night commuters. Hold on a second. Here we go.
The scars, both physical and psychological, spread into all facets of a society desperate to rebuild itself. Funding for rehabilitation is limited. Of those who go through the six-week program, in some places, only 35% receive follow-up monitoring upon returning to their communities, where they face both stigmatization and post-traumatic stress.
All these people are treated like beasts when they are in the bush. The conditions in which they come, they don't look like.
Okay, that's number five. I'm going to go straight to number six quickly.
Like human beings anymore.
Again, folks, what you want to do is go to YouTube and type in Uganda Rising, clip number six, because this ain't doing it no justice. This audio ain't doing it justice. You got to see these people's pain, look in their eyes, and you'll be able to see what we're talking about a little clearer. But, okay, because they're speaking, you know, in their native language, and they have the subtitles there. And you got to see the face, the conditions of work, the way they're living, all of this. The young man speaking of his experiences. So, again, this documentary is, I believe, one of the best I've seen. But it's just one of those things where you just can't do an audio. You need the video and be able to see all of the serious pain that these folks are going through. And, again, we're just talking about how the LRA, we look at the, as you see, the LRA is acting like demons, right? But I want you to just listen to some of the things, just what kind of brought it all about. That's what we're trying to find out, because otherwise we can stop this Joseph Kony with what YouTube and everybody, Facebook is doing. The United States got those 100 soldiers. Probably they'll send more. But this thing going to be bigger than that. They're going to need more than that. It's going to grow. It's going to be bigger than this, and they're going to get this guy. But it'd be nice if they can do this and stop the system that produced the Joseph Konys of the world. Okay, that's what this show is about tonight, trying to look at what produced the Joseph Konys of the world. And probably the most important videos is going to be yet to come. So stay tuned in. I'm just trying to fill in a little time while this gentleman is talking his native tongue because we don't understand it. Walla, while he's talking, I want to also just remind y'all, do a search on Alice, Holy Spirit Movement with Alice Laquina. That's something to check out. Alice Laquina is, again, I talked about it earlier, is a female that led this group, a woman, brave woman, supposedly led by, she was possessed, she said. She was supposed to be led by the Holy Spirit, she said, but I think it was another spirit. But check her out. Very interesting. And Wikipedia does a good thing on it because they kind of link the both with her and Joseph Kony and the history. You can really, they do a good job. At least it lines up with a lot of the other things I've seen about them. So I just wanted to just kind of just turn this down and give y'all a little bit more information. Also, Yahweh most 70, Yahweh, YOWERI, Book 70, was a warlord at one time, and who's now president. Do some history on him. He's very interesting. This is just kind of give you an idea of what's going on in Uganda. And all these people have one thing in common, fighting the imperialists. And they end up fighting each other. Crazy. Listen to clip number 6.
There are those who cannot express themselves in words. They cannot tell you, I did this, I did this. But when you give me more a piece of paper, the person will do exactly either what he witnessed or what he actually participated in doing.
Also, I want to slide in here and say something real quick while we got downtime here, nothing going on. Did y'all catch earlier when they said that Germany was responsible for the first genocide of the 20th century with the Herero people? That's something that you can do research on.
That I hope to go back to school. So that one really hurt my heart. And I hope to go back to school. It's very encouraging. You automatically see that this child is actually forgetting the past and actually looking to a peaceful life in the future.
The average age of a child abducted is just under 13 years. The average length of time in captivity is over 2 years. In a survey of 300 former LRA abductees, 77% witnessed another person being killed. 6% had seen their own mother, father, brother, or sister being killed. 2% had killed their own father, brother, or another relative. 39% were forced to kill another person. 52% had been seriously beaten. 39% had abducted another child. 64% of the children were forced into military action. And 35% of the girls abducted by the LRA are raped. To complicate matters, more than 1,000 abducted girls have conceived children in the bush, some now reaching adulthood. Joseph Coyne alone is rumored to have had 54 wives and over 200 children. For these LRA children, strange as it seems, their captors are family.
They're abducted from that abject poverty. Coyne takes them out there, makes big promises. We're going to win the war. When we win the war, you're going to have properties. You're going to be rich. You're going to have somebody. So immediately, this child sees an opportunity. Some of them will come out, and probably that abject poverty is even worse now than before they left, because suddenly they cannot even have 1 meal a day. Suddenly, that what used to be home is no longer home. Home is a camp. And not only that, some element of hostility from the community. So some of these children become very nostalgic about their days in the bush. If nothing is done sooner than later to start some program that, you know, can get them involved, they could be a huge source of insecurity. They could consider going back.
Due to 2 decades of war, a lack of belief in the Museveni government, and an utter repulsion to COIN, the Acholi leaders began to seek alternative ways to peacefully end the conflict. After years of pushing, the Amnesty Act was passed, which offered LRA rebels immunity from prosecution, regardless of the crimes committed. Since its implementation, nearly 4,000 LRA rebels have been given amnesty.
Amnesty seems to be working. Many of these people are now coming out because they feel they will not be killed, they will be accepted, and they are being accepted by the civil population. So they don't feel that they should be remaining in the bush. That was the way we also wanted. Even COIN should be profiting by this.
Even in Africa, I've never seen such a tolerant kind of culture where you can kill but so long.
Just listen to them talk about these kids is really getting to me. I mean, it's amazing that kids have to, I still can't get over those mic commuters, kids that just take off from their families and all just band together and just start running just so the LRA won't get a hold of them. That just, I can't get that out of my head. Here's clip number 7.
But you can confess.
And let me just stop this for a second. Again, what y'all may want to do, what you may want to do is go to YouTube, type in Uganda Rising Space 7. Uganda Rising Space and 7. And you can look at, mute that video, mute that one, and just watch the images while you listen to the show. And that way you'll be seeing, because you're only getting 50% of the energy that this video has with regards to this whole situation, this compulsive situation in Uganda. All right, check this out. We're almost done.
But you can confess, present excuses, and eventually pay some indemnity. The community will get you back.
Forgiveness is the beginning of reconciliation. And here, for the sake of this war to end, we are forgiving all those who committed atrocities. That is the voice of the majority.
And COIN will also have his like this one, if he comes. But I don't think COIN will agree to come back home, because he fears. He fears the public for the atrocities he has made.
Even with amnesty in place, President Museveni would not guarantee amnesty to COIN and the rest of the LRA high command. In addition, Museveni, despite allegations against his own government, went to The Hague to ask the International Criminal Court to investigate COIN and the LRA for their crimes against humanity. Many Acholi elders and peace leaders felt that prosecuting anybody in the LRA could break down the possibility of a peaceful resolution to the conflict.
The key to the court is not that it's some kind of broad-based world government that's going to fly in on black helicopters and pick people up. The whole basis of the court, it's a court of last resort. It's only when countries are either unable or unwilling to prosecute those who are committing war crimes that the International Criminal Court can come into action.
When I was in Sierra Leone for the first fortnight, and a gentleman stood up at the back of a town hall meeting and said to me precisely this: you're going to threaten the peace process, why don't you let sleeping dogs lie? And before I could respond, a very old Sierra Leonean gentleman stood up at the back of the hall and he said, but the sleeping dogs may not be asleep, they may just have their eyes closed.
Believing that blanket amnesty may be the only way to end the conflict, the Acholi community attempt reconciliation with returning LRA rebels through traditional cleansing and forgiveness rituals. The inhumane magnitude of LRA crimes will stretch the healing power of these traditions to extremes.
Cleansing ceremony in Acholi
is a total forgiveness and total reconciliation between the two opposing people.
It's like treatment. Psychologically, you feel empowered, you feel absolved, you feel you are yourself.
Traditionally, this symbolic cleansing ceremony has been used to integrate individuals back into the community. So from one to hundreds of returned LRA rebels will publicly line up and, with the guidance of an elder, follow the steps of the ritual.
Cleansing ceremony, each one of them is expected to step on the egg, and the purpose for an egg is that there is no mouth, so it does not insult, does not abuse. They also use pobo, which is a sort of tree, is slippery. That one is supposed to wash away any ill feeling. Now, the fact that they receive back home, they feel they are wanted, they are not rejected. So they will have all the confidence to talk to the people who are at home.
The cleansing ceremony is a public ritual. The private ritual, which involves confession and compensation, is known as Mataput.
This is a private thing between the person who killed and the family member. When we are fully organized, they are also fully organized, we shall be brought together. Let's say we are the aggressor. We shall be charged to pay something. And then some traditional gifts also will be brought by both sides. For instance, the rams. That side will be bringing a ram. Our side will also bring a ram. And when these two animals are brought together, my sheep will face your side and your sheep will face my side. Then the two will be brought down and cut in half. Your people will take the head of my sheep while I take that of yours. And the other part of yours, you keep it, we also keep this one. And then some of the intestine will be extracted, put in a local brew called kweta, in a big calabash. Well, this calabash must be big enough so that two heads can go in. Because I'll be kneeling down to represent my people, and both of us will be drinking at the same time from the same calabash. And at that time, the ladies make their relation very loudly. Everybody will be singing and dancing. That is to ensure that peace has been restored between the two.
But how far can forgiveness be taken when the participant is a known mass murderer?
Real quick, for those of y'all on the phone, on the chat, in the chat room, you got to call the phone number. You are going to be disconnected here in about 30 seconds. It's 760-283-0838. 760-283-0838.
I remember one time.
60 seconds now.
You know, I'm sitting here, I'm a destitute. You're not doing anything for me. You're giving the very people who killed my three sons and my husband, destroyed my home and whatever properties I had in life. And I have a machete wound on my back. And here I am. I see them pass by. I see you're doing good to them. We need to balance how much attention we give to the victims, because the victims need to be given a chance to come to closure with what has happened to them.
Sam Kolo was second in command under Coyne. He surrendered under duress and is now giving speeches about peace. Brigadier Kenneth Banya was a high advisor and known as one of the masterminds of the LRA.
Kenneth Banya, who was with me in 1979, 1980, he was with me. He's a fighter like me. So when they captured him, I said, don't put Banya in jail, because he's my comrade. He was with me, but he was separated from me by the bad politics. bad politics of the Ugandans?
For me, I would not fear if I know I've done something wrong. Yeah, because since I want peace, if I'm the only way to block peace, then I would go. But since I did not do anything there. I was just there also like a prisoner.
That's why I don't agree with Banya. Also, Banya has been claiming that you is an abductee. Forget it, Banya. 87. 87, that thing was a rebellion. It was supported by the people on the ground. No doubt about that.
This Banya man, Brigadier, came and massacred 70 people in one single day to have kept quiet.
We know what Banya did. He himself said he was the man who designed the LRA and most of the brutal killings. And ordinarily, if we are to go by the fact that leaders who commit crimes are not to be forgiven, then he would have been one of such person not to be forgiven.
We know that the Creator God is the one who helped us. And we have come out through his sympathy. And I think the sympathy or the amnesty, the forgiveness people are doing is through incited by God. That's what, to me, I think. And to us, we believe like that.
One thing I think we need to be careful about, and it came in Sierra Leone, where I was told when I first got there, was that Sierra Leoneans were the most forgiving people in the world. And I was just completely taken aback by the way that I was told they had accepted what had happened in that 10-year war. And as I got to know more Sierra Leoneans across a wide range of society, I spoke to them about this. And I was surprised, but pleased to hear.
Okay, folks, we're winding down here now. Again, talking about this LRA and different things that have happened. They're kind of going different angles on this. We got a couple more videos, and we're done. We're done. So I appreciate y'all stopping by and listening. Again, we're about to do clip number 8. So what you want to do is type in Uganda Rising and then space 8. Uganda Rising 8, and you can see with your eyes what we're hearing. Just turn that player down and keep me turned up because we may interrupt with a question or comment by one of the guests listening in the, on the blog, okay? Number 8 and then 9 is the last one.
Don't run away with the idea that we are forgiving. We had no option. We've had 10 years of war. When you're like us, when you're poor, when you're underprivileged, when there is illiteracy at a high rate there, is that you have no say, you have no voice.
In a move reminiscent of the divide-and-rule policies of colonial Britain, the Museveni government in 2005 awarded large sums of money to Brigadier Kenneth Banya and other LRA leaders to start work initiatives in northern Uganda. This means, courtesy of the Museveni government, some victims of LRA war crimes, the abducted and their families, now have to work under the top advisors and masterminds of the Lord's Resistance Army.
I think it was in Kidgo one time, where a very elderly woman, she told to one of the government officials, she said, now we come to understand that Kony and Museveni seem to have conspired against the people of Acholi to eliminate them.
The most immediate objective in places like northern Uganda is to get the conflict over. There's too many people being killed and maimed or injured or violated. But if you don't incorporate as part of a peace process some degree of justice, it's not going to last. There'll just be too many lingering sense of recrimination, of revenge, of reaction. So that there's always this very important mixture of justice and peace that has to be resolved. Nobody has an automatic formula for that.
In September of 2005, A faction of the largely decimated Lord's Resistance Army was rumored to have fled into the Congo, increasing border tensions. Days later, the International Criminal Court, for the first time since its creation, issued arrest warrants against Joseph Coyne and his top four commanders for crimes against humanity, making them, in theory, the most wanted criminals in the world.
One thing that I question ICC about is whether they should intervene in an ongoing war. If this intervention is going to be at the cost of a possible resolution of the conflict, then let justice wait. We want peace first.
As for international intervention, the United Nations Security Council still refuses to send peacekeepers into northern Uganda. They deem the rebel army as inaccessible and unwilling to negotiate. The UN also believes the government is in sufficient control of civilian safety, despite the displacement of over 1.5 million people, 20 years of random terror, and over 25,000 child abductions.
The United Nations deals with sovereign states. I think it is much easier even for other international organizations to approach governments and rebels. For the UN, as long as there is no direct, in other words, open will by the actors, by the national actors themselves, the government in particular, then it's an imposition.
Ultimately, the Security Council is the executive branch. Those five permanent members, China, France, Britain, Russia, and the United States, come out. They decide, is dealing with northern Uganda in our interests? When a country doesn't measure up politically, the residual part of the UN gets tapped. And that's the part that actually doesn't have to get clearance through the Security Council. And those are the agencies, whether the World Health Organization or the feeding programs or UNAIDS. But the kind of attention that makes a chronic problem and a problem that deadly go away is not the kind of attention you've gotten so far.
The Ministry of Health in Uganda released figures for the first time of the numbers of people who died in the camps, and they far exceed the numbers killed by the LRA. By any scale, this is a crime against humanity.
These things do not happen in one place. You know, we tend to mislead ourselves by studying Africa and Vietnam and Haiti and so on, which is fine, you should study them. But the main thing to study is ourselves. There's a center of power, not one, but several centers of power. And the things that are happening in Latin America and Africa and India and so on often are very similar because they're all being pretty much organized from the same centers. As long as we sort of look at it as something out there, that's very convenient. Much more sensible to look into the mirror.
So while all forms of terror bludgeon the human spirit, they also recall our mutual humanity and can motivate an individual or group of human beings to act with remarkable compassion. If the deeper roots of this conflict are racism, religious domination, or the continued scramble for African natural resources, one can begin to see just how much compassion and strength it will take to stand up for the children of northern Uganda. What would it take to live as if neighbors, strangers, even enemies, are brothers and sisters? To always protect women and children, and to stand in the onslaught of every moment for something more beautiful than what we now believe in.
I always see hope in terms of the children who are so proud when they're going to school. You feel hope when you see everyday acts of kindness between people. How people always greet each other, look at each other.
A look at history and perception of what we see, it does, I think, lend some credibility to a traditional view coming out of the Enlightenment, which says that fundamental to human nature is a kind of an instinct for freedom. And I think we see plenty of examples of it. People struggling all over the world for freedom. They don't like to be oppressed.
Despite the continued difficulty in terms of trying to cope with the challenge of daily survival as a result of the conflict, they're still optimistic that one day they will go home.
I get my hope and my inspiration from the people who haven't been helped and yet who somehow, I don't know how, haven't given up on the rest of us.
I see hope because there's that resilience I see in the eyes of the people that maybe one day it will come. It's the looking at it as a face. It's not like they're so despondent that they've given up. They've not given up. And that gives me a lot of hope.
There is an African proverb that says, when two elephants fight, it's the grass that gets injured. And so, for the children of northern Uganda, the conflict continues. The Acholi people have been devastated. Women and children remain unprotected, and in fact brutalized by a culture and a world unable to balance itself. And yet hope walks on. For the spirit that flows from village to town every night will never be extinguished by political ideology or international blunders. History has shown us that differences, both beautiful and horrific, will always burn. But they will never replace the eternal desire for peace, for family, for reconciliation.
Okay, folks, one more and we're done. One more, and that's number 9, and we're done. Want to just thank everybody again. I think what happens is after 9 goes off, we just wrap it up. Unless you got any questions or comments. So any of y'all on the phone lines listening, if you got a question or comment, go ahead with what you have to say, or else we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. Okay, going once, going twice. All right, here's clip number 9. Thank y'all for hanging in there and listening. Y'all must be getting educated because everybody's still on the phone lines. Listen attentively. So here's clip number 9.
Love, joy, and resilience will continue. Above all else, the inexhaustible spirit of the Acholi children stand for this.
If the wool and stand shall still walk it.
This one is only 3 minutes. Of the Acholi people in camp, 25,000 children have been abducted. Nearly 1,000 people die every week in camp. 1,000, wow. Again, this is on YouTube. Listen to all, listen to all 9 clips. That was a short clip. That last one was a short one. So listen, folks, I'm going to wrap this up. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank y'all for hanging around. I'll tell you, it's amazing. But for those of y'all recommending this to other people, remember the first two is probably the most important one because it talks about European influence in this very strongly. I should have known it was going to do it non-clipped, but it did do it. The first two clips, very strong. It's probably the most important clips now that we're looking back. All right, but listen, thank y'all for listening to another episode of Five Smooth Stones. Again, I'm Brother Seth. We've been talking about Joseph Kony and the LRA and the Uganda situation, northern, mainly northern issues in northern Uganda with the Choli people and the Langi people. They didn't mention much about the Langi people, but they are up there north as well. And like I say, Joseph Kony is as bad as they say. However, he is manufactured, produced by exploitation, greed, and European and the West just doing what they do all across the world. Go in there and get what they want. These people don't have no value to them. And unfortunately, our way of life right now as we speak is at their expense. And that is the truth. So we all play a part in their oppression. Very important we know that. I just want to thank again everybody for listening. This just really bothered me. I mean, sometimes shows get to me more than others, and this is one of those that, I mean, it was so much I learned listening to these nine clips. I don't know if y'all really listen to the children. You got to go back and look at the actual videos because audio just don't cut it. You miss out on a whole lot of things. And do a search on this Alice Laquina, this Holy Spirit movement. These people singing praises and killing this militia. They off the chain. I mean, not in a good way, in a bad way. But I've never heard nothing like that. And even the LRA does the same thing. Oftentimes, when they defeated Alice Laquina, they got some of their followers, and they was doing a lot of singing. Remember this LRA, their leader, Joseph Kony, he proclaims himself to be a prophet. And you heard some of his ex-followers, some of his close people say, those that are ex-LRA members say, that he has supernatural powers. What does that mean? I think it's satanic powers is what I think personally. But this is interesting, very, very interesting, folks. So it's not as cut and dry as you see. Exploitation, rape of that land, Europeans all involved in the politics, got the government, the head of the government out of the throat, no telling what they got against those people to blackmail them into. I just don't believe every single person that rises to power in Africa is wicked. You know, especially when they're ruling over gold and oil and resources that we need every day. I'm not that stupid. So they get these people out there in a way that they can't, you know, they get stuff on them or they threaten them or no telling, and they begin to just take over their land. Then we have all these coups that rises up to power that fights to overthrow these governments over and over and over. This happens. Again, Museveni was one himself. The very president was one himself. So anyway, my. Africa, Africa, Africa. Telling you, they'll never let it rest because of what it has. We need to know that and not just buy into this. I applaud the gentleman on YouTube, the chairman, president of this Invisible Children, but I think they are missing a whole nother side of the coin. They have got to address why you have the Joseph Konys of the world, or they're just wasting time. It'll be another one, more black children crying. You know, the one boy touched his heart, and that's what inspired the whole movement. There's millions of kids crying like that boy was crying on that video. Anyway, and that video is also online. I'm not going to do no advertising for it. Actually, I will because I did like the video, but just type in Invisible Children on YouTube. I'm sure you'll be able to find that video. It's 30 minutes long, and you'll see what's causing all the excitement. Thank you. Good night. God bless you, and love every single one of y'all, and ain't nothing you can do about it. Good night.